Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM, helping to create a storehouse of possibilities and products from a single seed. ADM, resourceful by nature.
Welcome to the Closing Mark Report. It's March the 20th, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. He's out of New Market, Indiana. In agricultural news, Business Week is reporting the nation's livestock producers have put together a strategy to lobby Congress. They would like it if some of the ethanol tariffs and tax breaks set to expire next year were not renewed. And the U.S. and South Korea are working on a bilateral trade agreement, but they're bumping up against a time constraint. The president's TPA, Trade Promotion Authority, is set to expire soon. Dave Dickey will have details of these and other stories shortly. Just after the bottom of the hour, of course, meteorologist Don Day will join us for a look at the agricultural weather forecast. It all happens on this Tuesday edition of WILL AM 580's Closing Market Report. So stay with us.
Did you miss the Closing Market Report or some of our other agricultural programming? We've got the answer. You can get all our AM 580 agricultural shows delivered daily directly to your computer. Just go to our website, willoag.org, and look for the headline, subscribe to AM 580 Ag Podcast. Follow the simple steps, and you'll never miss an ag broadcast again. From the pre-opening and opening ag reports to the closing market report to Commodity Week, all delivered to your computer when you need it. Head on over to willoag.org and put the AM 580 Agricultural Podcasts to work for you.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.
In Chicago on this Tuesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby May wheat at 462 and three quarters, up 7 3/4 this afternoon. July at 476 and a quarter, 6 1/4 higher. And the September soft red winter wheat at $4.86 a bushel, finished 6 cents higher. May corn futures up 7 1/4 at 405 1/4. July at 417, up 7 cents higher. And December futures settled at 409 1/4. They were up 3 1/4 for the day. May bean meal futures at 764 3/4, up 5 1/4. July at 780 1/2, up 5 1/4. And November beans up a nickel at $8.08 a bushel. May bean meal futures at $221.20. They were up $1.70. May bean oil at $31.24. They were up 25 for the day. Mercantile exchange numbers. Feeder cattle, March contract, $104.20 a hundredweight. They were up down 92.5 cents. April futures were off 20 cents at 97.60 in the live cattle pit, and June futures there at 94.95 were up a dollar for the day, rather up a dime for the day. April lean hogs 30 cents lower at $64.07 a hundredweight. Outside markets, crude oil, April contract $56.30 a barrel. They're off 29 cents at this hour. The CRB index at 305.12, that's up 0.54. The dollar at 83.08, down 0.28, and the Dow at 12,280 is now just about 55 points higher for the afternoon.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade, the Mercantile Exchange, and in the outside markets is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about this marketplace as you see it, and then we'll take it up from there real quickly.
Well, you know, we saw a tremendous bounce back here in the last 40 minutes of the day. It looked pretty lackluster the majority of the day here, Todd. We come in, we'd been up a little bit overnight. We come in and just sort of sold off and didn't look good. And it seemed like wheat run out of sellers down the bottom and seemed to find a little support. And as it gained strength, it pulled strength back into the other markets. It was down basically the plains wheat crop conditions. And the projected rain was sort of a negative thing coming into wheat early this morning. But when we couldn't push to lower levels, it seemed like that stabilized the market. And then we saw Cargill by about 800 May beans, and that helped stabilize the things. Then we saw some commercial scale down buying in the corn. And then the noon weather forecast, or the later forecast, looks like it's going to be at least 10 to 12 days of wet, damp weather that pushes back some of the ideas of early planning. So all that together come together for a pretty strong close.
A fairly strong close. You expect follow through tomorrow?
Well, you know, the weather forecasts stay wet. We did close up above some good support levels here today. Technically, we had a very good close, and we'll probably try to, you know, challenge some of last week's highs and see if we get up, you know, when we get up against resistance, we'll see how it acts.
As we take a look at the wheat market, while it had a pretty good day today, if you look on the lead option for the weekly, there was a pretty harsh downturn, and a pretty big gap it has yet to fill. You think it has the horses? It finished up on the top end. You think it has the horses really to try to move into that gap area?
You know, we did see some sales to Egypt here this morning. Russia and the U.S. got some of those sales. If we could see a couple other decent sales happen along the way, why, we can probably push on up there. But they're going to look over at, you know, the sister corn there and see if it can continue to react like it did today, too.
And corn for the last, several trading days has finished, I think, down on the 100-day, just right at the 100-day moving average. But it hasn't penetrated that at this point. I suppose that's starting to be a fairly decent sign that there's more upside potential.
Well, you know, basically, if you can't go below good support, well, that's always a good thing if you're long. But, I mean, you know, like, it's the one thing we are taking a real solid look at is, you know, holding above these levels. And then, of course, we're nearing next Friday's big report. And that, along with the weather forecast, is going to tell the tale for the summer.
And will we be more volatile going into this report than we have in previous years, generally speaking? Things settle in and people find their niche and then just sit back and wait for the reports to take place. Do you think that'll be the case this year?
No. I think that this is probably one of the biggest USDA reports we've had in the last 5 years. So I'd say volatility would be very, very high next week.
And Wayne Nelson going to take a bet on that one as we head in?
I think that we're going to be up on all the acres, but I don't think we're going to top the 90 million in the corn, and I don't think we're going to go below the 70 million on the beans. So I'm, you know, just thinking that we're probably pretty apropos for what we're seeing right now. But that's just my feeling, because I don't think that there's enough good seed corn in some of the areas that they're going to kick up over that extra production there.
And then tell me a little bit about the mercantile exchange for the day. A lot of red there.
A lot of red over at the Merck. You know, when the grain market goes on up like this, what makes it a little harder in the cattle and the hogs. Of course, we got the cattle on feed report coming up on Friday, looking for 96% on feed, 104.7 placements, and 105.2 in the marketings. You know, the cattle didn't, they just horsed around here today. They, you know, up 10 to down 20, not a lot there. The feeder cattle is where we took the real hit, Todd. They were down 90-97, so that looking that way. Hogs, they're lackluster. We've got a lot of hogs out there now, and they were hoping for the cattle to pull them up. And with cash cattle being forecast down $1 to $2 this week, why the cash hogs didn't pressure anything either.
Anything else to add before I let you go for the day?
That's about it today, Todd.
All right. Thanks much, Wayne.
Thank you.
Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana, joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens each and every Tuesday afternoon.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carl Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
At the bottom of the hour, we'll talk with meteorologist Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, about the agricultural weather forecast for the globe. Our own Scott Althoff says tonight across the two-state region in the western sections will be cloudy. There'll be some showers. A few thunderstorms will move in. Elsewhere, becoming cloudy, some showers and thunderstorms moving in that after midnight. Lows, Scott says, will range from 38 in the north to 58 in the south. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy skies, a bit warmer, some occasional showers, a few thunderstorms. Highs tomorrow from 63 in the north to 75 in the south today. The wind speeds will top about 10 to 15 miles an hour tomorrow. Wind speeds about 15 to 25 miles per hour with a few higher gusts. Spring-like temperatures will, of course, be in store for the region for the next 3 to 7 days. Spring arrives at 7:07 this evening. Dave Dickey's here now with today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, the most recent issue of Business Week magazine reports that representatives of the U.S. cattle, pork, dairy, and poultry producers held a conference call last week to discuss strategies for convincing Congress to allow the current ethanol tax credit and tariff to expire on schedule. At issue is the 54 cent per gallon tariff on imported ethanol and a 51 cent per gallon federal tax incentive for ethanol blenders. The former is scheduled to expire in January of 2009, the latter a year later. House Agriculture Committee Chairman Colin Peterson, a Democrat from Minnesota, acknowledges that livestock, dairy, and poultry producers are experiencing some, in his words, short-term pain from high corn prices. However, Peterson says it is unlikely that Congress will agree to end either the subsidy or tariff. Instead, says Peterson, both should be extended or made permanent in federal law. The U.S. and South Korea have begun another round of free trade talks, their eighth, but time is running out to reach a deal before Presidential Fast Track Trade Promotion Authority expires. Tracy Grandin is with the American Farm Bureau Federation, and she has this report.
U.S. agriculture groups are in South Korea this week negotiating the last stages of a free trade agreement that includes several sensitive issues for agriculture.
We're looking at issues dealing with beef, citrus, rice. The Koreans don't want additional rice access or citrus. And beef, we're dealing not only with access, but with the issue of BSC and allowing U.S. beef into their market.
American Farm Bureau Director of Congressional Relations Chris Garza tells why beef is an important component of the South Korea Free Trade Agreement.
If Korea does allow U.S. beef into their market, it will open that door for us with the rest of Asia and put pressure on China and Japan and other countries and allow U.S. beef into their market regardless of age and bone-in or boneless.
But with the U.S. under the deadline of Trade Promotion Authority, Garza says negotiations need to be finalized soon.
The Koreans have told the United States that if we cannot resolve these negotiations by the end of March, which would be our deadline under Trade Promotion Authority, that the negotiations are then off. If that does happen, there's a potential that we will never have a free trade agreement with Korea.
Tracy Grandin, Washington.
Key members in the Democrat-led Senate say they've begun work on a new energy policy. North Dakota Democrat Byron Dorgan says there is clear support in the Senate for legislation that would increase use of biofuels, boost production of renewable energy, and make cars and trucks more fuel efficient. Another leg of the energy policy will address global warming. Dorgan says that's being considered by the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee and Chair Barbara Boxer, a California Democrat. North Dakota state researchers are trying to create canola varieties to produce more oil for biodiesel. Bill Wilson is overseeing the project.
Our major objective is to increase oil content per acre. 06 was our first planting season. We've been able to select some lines that increase that oil content per acre by about 16 to 18%, which is fairly substantial. That's not oil per bushel, that's oil content per acre. So that's what we're focusing on, and our goal is to increase that to about 20%.
Wilson says he expects the program will be expanded to other research extension centers later this year.
We've had two winter lines. We'll be beginning to breed in cross lines with other publicly accessible varieties, and I'd say we'll be at peak plantings in 07. This ultimately is a four-year project, so we're hoping by the time we get to that fourth year, if not before, we'll be ready to be releasing germplasm lines.
Wilson says the research is a joint effort of North Dakota State University and two agribusiness giants, Archer Daniels Midland and Monsanto. The director of the National Bioenergy Center at the Department of Energy's National Renewable Energy Laboratory says the goal of commercial cellulosic ethanol production in 3 years is aggressive but achievable. Michael Pacino says cellulosic ethanol should be able to compete with corn-based ethanol by 2012. And the European Biodiesel Board is urging import duties on U.S. biodiesel. In a letter to European Union Trade Commissioner Peter Mandelson, the EBB says a U.S. subsidy of $1 on every gallon produced is creating an unfair trade advantage. In January, the U.S. exported 30,000 metric tons of biodiesel to the EU. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to visit our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find all sorts of things, including a link to the pictures, or at least some of them, that I took on my trip to India this past couple of weeks. I'd like to talk to you just a little bit about that for a few moments this afternoon, and we'll get some more concrete kinds of feature stories later in the week and next week as I'm able to gather up all the information that we took in over that two-week period while we were in India. India is an extraordinary country. It's a country filled with people. There are a billion people, in fact, in India, and they have a pretty good sense of humor about that. And one chap told me that they have a television show that focuses on somebody, and they call it One in a Billion. Well, that makes perfect sense. It's a very, very poor country. Let me tell you just about how poor it might be. People are on the sides of the streets consistently and constantly, and it matters not whether you are in town, in city, or in the country. They are there all the time, persistently, and it seems to be at almost all hours of the day. I wasn't out, of course, in the middle of the evening or the night, but I did travel later into the evening at 7, 8, 9, 10 o'clock, and people were always around. And not just a few people. Remember, there are a billion people. We traveled 155 miles from New Delhi to a place called Pantnagar. Now, this is in the heart of wheat-growing country in India. And that 155-mile trip took us 7 hours in the car, in the seat. We did stop for 1 hour, but that's not included in the 7-hour trip. It was a phenomenal trip at a very slow speed. We were on what most would consider the hard road, a two-lane highway that ran from New Delhi through several larger cities, and most of their cities are fairly large by certainly by scales here in the state of Illinois, to Pantnagar, which was where G.B. Pant University was located. 7 hours that we were in the car. I'm thinking that along that route, we traveled maybe past some 300,000 people. I did some quick calculations. I don't know whether that's the case or not, but let's put it this way. In any tenth of a mile, I would guess that we saw at least five people in the least populated tenth of a mile. They use everything to travel with. It's sugarcane harvest season, and they have tandem trucks just filled to the very top, probably twice the height of most grain trucks, with sugarcane. Those gather up sugarcane from an intermediate area, which farmers who average about 1 hectare, 2.2 acres or something like that, a piece, take their sugarcane in. And they haul that in by cart and bullock, or water buffalo, as the case might be. And those water buffalo and carts and the tractors and carts and the trucks and motorcycles, more than you can count, all share the road at the same time. It's an amazing sight, and it slows things down tremendously. Now, here's one little tidbit, is that everybody in India is a really, really good offensive driver. They're very aggressive. They lane split. They push people out of the way. They honk their horns continuously. In fact, if you're not used to it and you don't realize what they're up to, the horn honking is more just to let people know where you are in relation to them. It's a courtesy. In fact, on the back of the trucks, there are a couple of signs. One always says, horn please, or blow your horn. The other says, use your dipper, which is, if you're traveling at night, to dim your lights. This country is filled with people that are extraordinarily courteous, I think. And on their driving, they're very aggressive. When they come here, of course, we drive in our lane and pass when we can, and very patiently. Not the case there. I saw two accidents, but I can't tell you how many hundreds of thousands or maybe in the millions of cars that I saw on the road. And they were packed bumper to bumper, no matter how fast we were going. But we never went very fast. I think the highest speeds that I saw were close to 60 miles an hour. And those didn't last very long, and very quickly we came down to very, very slow speeds. This country, this nation, this developing world is also vegetarian. By design, I think, in some respects, and certainly because they don't have the cash flow, the bulk of them, to purchase meat. I think it would be potentially wrong to assume that India, like China, might start consuming more red meat, chicken and hogs in particular, not beef, of course, as they get more income. I'm not sure that that would be the case. I think they will stay vegetarian because that's the type of culture that they have. Their food's very spicy, very good. But India is not one of those places, despite the fact that they have a billion people, that I would see as a huge red meat market. They will need an enormous amount of wheat, maize and corn, rice. Those sorts of things, I think, will come into the country easily. They already import much of that. They grow a great deal as well. They're one of the largest wheat growers in the world, but their population is just enormous. It is also one of the dirtiest places that I have ever been in the world. I have not been out of the country often. Once to Ukraine, I've been to Mexico, Canada, of course, which is like going to America, and to India. But there was more trash there than you can just shake a stick at. India has a very long way to go. They're a very proud people, and they are ready, willing, and I think quite capable of entering into the next step of their development. They're in a developing world stage at this point, and they certainly would like to become a Western-type nation, and a first-world nation. It will be a very, very long haul for India. We can only hope that they will come along quickly and peacefully. I think that's probably the case. But when you have a billion people and the density of the people is as amazing as it is, it may be a difficult haul. Somebody asked me, I was asked, in fact, more than once, what it was about India that I found most unique. And always the answer is the number of people, the density of people. You cannot turn without finding somebody there. And always the response was, I know somebody who went to Western Europe, or I know somebody who went to America, and they were lonely because they were always alone. We don't appreciate the space that we have here in the United States, and we need to take better care of that space. We need to recognize the great gift that we have in this country that allows us to be alone should we want to be alone. They do not have that luxury in India. Just some of my views. We'll hear more feature stories later in the week and next week. I'm Todd Gleason. Up next, your regional newscast.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Searchers have located the submerged body of an 8-year-old boy who's been missing since a boating accident on Clinton Lake last week. Kalen Hunter of Normal disappeared after his grandfather's boat apparently ran out of gas on Wednesday night and was carried over a spillway. Chris McLeod of the Illinois Department of Natural Resources says they're working to recover the body from below the spillway. The other passengers on the boat, Kalen Hunter's grandfather, Richard Hunter, and uncle Jason Hunter, both drowned and were found on Thursday. Officials with the Illinois State Board of Education say elementary school students are taking state assessments this week that contain up to 13 errors. A board spokesman says many of the mistakes were caught and schools were sent instructions to address the errors. Members of the Illinois Commerce Commission and the head of Ameren plan to meet this afternoon in Springfield. CEO Scott Sissel is expected to answer questions about Ameren's announcement that it's considering cost-cutting measures because the credit rating for the utility's three Illinois subsidiaries was lowered to junk status. Dozens of Chicago ministers have thrown their support behind Governor Blagojevich's budget proposal. The ministers from black churches appeared today with the governor at Chicago's First Church of Deliverance. The budget would include the biggest tax increase in Illinois history to pay for health care and education. Under the plan, a new tax on business transactions would bring in an estimated $6 billion. One speaker at the event, the Reverend Stephen Thurston, says the governor's plan to give all Illinois residents access to health insurance should be a model to the nation. Lawmakers in Indiana are taking another step toward closing a loophole in that state's open meeting law. The law would prohibit so-called serial meetings, separate gatherings by less than a quorum of a government board to discuss the same subject. The loophole allowed Indiana University's trustees to meet without public notice to discuss basketball coach Bob Knight's fate shortly before his firing back in 2000. The Indiana House Committee on Government and Regulatory Reform has endorsed a Senate bill to close that loophole. The bill now moves to the full House, which passed a similar bill. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. You're listening to WILL Urbana. We're joined on this Tuesday afternoon by Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast here and around the globe. Hi, Don.
Hello there.
How's the wheat crop doing in the northern part of the United States and out west?
Well, in the northern parts, they could use a little bit of moisture. It's been a while since they've had some good moisture, and certainly some warmer temperatures have got things going in terms of a little bit of early growth, but there is some good news. It does look like precipitation chances in those northern areas are going to go up over the next week or two. The southern and western wheat areas still benefiting from all the snow that fell earlier this winter. They've had a spell of warmer weather. They could actually use a little bit of moisture, but there's some coming. Without a doubt, there's a very good chance of moisture going to those areas. So for the wheat areas, northern areas, and the southern and western areas could use a little bit of moisture.
And then spring is upon us. We'll arrive, I think, at 7:07 this evening here in the Midwest. What kind of weather might we have as we move through the rest of the week across Illinois and Indiana?
Well, very spring-like. It's going to be very spring-like with some pretty mild temperatures and an influx of energy coming off the Pacific coast, bringing us some chances for moisture. Moisture chances are going to be going up, especially in the western Corn Belt and the western plains, as we get into the weekend and into early next week. It looks like a fairly active pattern of storms moving west to east across the country, but temperatures are going to average above normal. Southerly to southwest winds aloft will be dominating, so it's going to be mild and a little bit moist.
Soybean harvest is moving along quite steadily in South America. Will they have good conditions?
For the most part, they will be. There's going to be a little bit of rain in Brazil, but I don't see it as enough to cause any delays.
And then if you would, check in on moisture conditions in China as they set up for their soybean and corn planting season. I know those are in potentially in two different parts of that nation.
Yeah, well, the central and the western areas are a little bit on the dry side. The better moisture has been in the south and the east and the northeast, and that's where the best shower chances are going to be here over the next week or two. But we are going to be looking at precipitation increasing a bit in China, but I would say that those western and central areas could use some moisture. The eastern areas and the southern areas aren't doing all that bad.
Don, we appreciate you being with us.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens each and every Tuesday afternoon. Don't forget to tune in tomorrow morning at 8:49 for our first in-depth look at the day's markets with your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the radio station, Dave Dickey. And remember, you can listen to today's futures analysis and the weather reports right there on the World Wide Web. Just go to WILL.UIUC.EDU and click on AM and then Agriculture. Or otherwise, you can go to willag.org. That's WILLAG.ORG. You have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.